The podcast you are about to listen to discusses comic books and comic book related media. Be warned, the following will review art, plot, and themes, and will therefore contain spoilers of the materials discussed. Welcome to Comics League International.
This is Brent and Lydia Talk Starman.
Starman!
And this is our, huzzah, huzzah, this is our 10th episode where we talk about Starman issue 9.
10th episode?
I know. I think this kind of means we're roughly about a tenth of the way through the Starman opus. Is that what I can call it there?
Yeah, I think so. I'm not sure what it means in a non-musical context, though.
You know, or the... Probably not me either. The Big Starman story. We're about a tenth of the way through. Yeah.
Yeah.
and this issue called Shards came out July of 95 by our usual squad of James Robinson, Tony Harris, Wade Von Grobinger... Graubager? I'm not sure. I'm going to call it Graubager. It sounds the best to me. John Workman, Gregory Wright, Chuck Kim, and Archie Goodwin.
Yay! Ooh. Team Starman.
Huzzah, huzzah.
Okay.
So, by any chance, do you know of any fun events that happened during July of 95?
Well, Brent... I sure do!
Yippee!
Okay, this is... I don't know. This is the one that stood out for me because... I think I was 7, but I heard of him when I was 10 because I live in Asia. Enrique Iglesias.
Ah.
He releases his first album. And it's called Enrique Iglesias. It's eponymous. Do you know who he is?
I do, but like I remember, I remember that name, but I can't remember like any of his songs. I know he's not Ricky Martin.
I see. Right. Yeah. You know what? I actually don't know his most famous song, but I know that he is his girlfriend. He's a tennis player, I think. That's Kornikova. So.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
See, all these names, they just sound very mid-90s.
I know. Yeah. So that's him, king of Latin pop. He released his first album in July 1995. And then also... we get the announcement from Forbes magazine that Bill Gates is the richest man in the world. Yes, in July 1995, it became official that he is... I don't know who actually is the richest man in the world right now, but...
I don't know.
You know, July 1995.
Is it the Alibaba guy?
Right. Could it be the Chinese guy, right?
Yeah.
Richest man in the world.
You know, if I'm really glad you knew that I was talking about the website Alibaba, because if you ask the Chinese guy, I realized that could sound like really, really racist if you didn't know. Like, you know, one of them Arabs, you know, the Alibaba guy. Like it just sounds awful. And I'm showing my own roots by being like, oh, I'm going to make someone sound racist. I'll make him sound Southern. Curse you, media! Getting in my head.
But you know what? It's one of those things. I've just Googled richest man in the world 2016. It's Bill Gates! But, I mean, I think it's just a coincidence that, you know, July 1995, he was the richest man in the world, and 2016, he is... still the richest man. It's not still. He has been replaced several times. But for the past 3 years, Bill Gates has been the richest man in the world.
He does lots of charity. Lots of charity.
Yeah. So I'm interested to know actually what's the name of the Alibaba guy and how does he rank. But let's save that
for a future time. For Brit and Lydia,
yeah.
Talk Really Rich People, our new podcast.
Yeah. About one last thing about July 1995 is Dreams from My Father. Have you heard that book?
Yeah.
Have you heard of that book?
That was, wasn't that Barack Obama's?
Yeah. I'm like, this is the first time that I'm actually, like, I don't know. But he wrote a book. He's an author.
I think he's done two books at least.
Really? But this is like way before he was the president. So
yeah.
I don't know. It's just like, wait, what? I have no idea what President Obama used to do before he became president. So this is very revelatory for me.
Wow.
So I'm surprised. I didn't know that he published a book.
You know, I knew he published a book, but I'll be honest, I did not know it came out in 95. I thought it was one of those, you know, the politician books where it's like, hey, I'm going to be running for something soon. And coincidentally enough, about a year beforehand, here's a book. And he might have done that as well. But, wow, I didn't know it came out in 95. Huh.
I gotta be
honest, that kind of makes me want to read it, you know, more. Before I was like, maybe someday. But now that it came out in 95,
yeah.
It's like, wow, that has nothing to do with his presidency. I'm curious.
Mm-mm. Yeah, so that's what I picked up. So, yeah, that's what happened in 1995 that caught my attention, because most of the things on the internet is very out of my league. So, yay!
Well then, to jump into Shards, mm-hmm. Starman issue 9, I got a quick synopsis for all our listeners before we just, you know, go into it and talk about it page by page, panel by panel.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And that is the accurately named Shards. Well, it's more of a series of vignettes rather than a single storyline. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we begin with Jack. He's still at the circus. And we hear, rather, and we're kind of shown, of his twice returning. Once it was to take away Michael, our blue cosmic space geek, the cosmic geek, who, it turns out, was a former Starman.
Yep.
And the second time he went for the visit, you know, it was a little chat, a little wine, a little flirtation with Octavia that turned incredibly intimate. And then afterwards, you know, we get Jack returning to Opal City where he's fighting the good fight. Although, you know, he's dressed in clothes that his father would prefer he not be. And, you know, we get to learn a little bit more kind of about their relationship and Ted's past as Ted shares his prior adventures. Mm. So then, after that's done, we're going to flash over to a certain alley with a certain poster that does certain things. Mm-hmm. And then a certain stand-in for Rasputin certainly shows up. And after a little while, so does the Shade. Then we get a nice little page of Jack driving some hard bargains, and then we get Matt O'Dare doing some dirty deeds. Oh, and by the way, Nash totally escapes from jail. And as is happening, Jack totally lounging on the sofa. And that's, you know, how I'd sum up all the little twists and turns of this issue.
Mm-hmm. Yes!
Yay.
Yeah. Nice.
So, the cover.
T- I didn't get it. I don't know why the... Oh, wait a minute. I get it now! Oh, okay!
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Where's the... He burns the shirt!
Yeah, it's a nice, like... It's kind of almost a coda to the issue that that comes at the beginning.
Yeah. Guys listening, why my reaction was delayed is because I obviously looked at the cover before I read the book. Before.
Well, that's crazy. You looked at the cover before. But you know what?
Oh, okay, I get it now.
You know what? Something though. Yes. All the times I've read this issue in many different formats, I think this might be the first time I noticed that the Jack on the cover is in fact shirtless.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I don't think I noticed that before. I think I was just like, oh, they're burning something. They're probably burning the shirt. Ooh, look, smoke. Da-da-da. But I never quite looked close enough to be like, Jack shirtless.
Ah, okay. Well, if you rewind to a few seconds before when I said, oh, they're burning the shirt, that's when I realized that he's shirtless. So. Ah, okay. Yes, guys who aren't looking at the book right now, the cover right now, he is shirtless. He has a nice body.
Well, you know, he's a superhero. He should. That's a lot of exercise.
He does. Yes, he does get a lot of exercise. What does it say, though? Gray Kemp?
Like,
on the barrel. What do you call it? A barrel?
Yeah, it looks like Frey.
Frey.
Frey Kim, maybe short for Frey Chemicals. Like, maybe the name of a place. Yeah, maybe.
Clues.
Could be clues. It could just be, like, a little shout-out. Like, maybe, you know, Tony Harris knows someone whose last name's Frey, and so he's making, like, a little, here, there you go.
Right. Yeah.
It's an interesting cover.
It is.
Yeah.
It's very... It's part of the story, which is kind of rare, I think.
Yeah.
I think it's like what you said, it's a coda to the story. And, you know, it's not like one of those random... Here, I have a stylized picture of Jack.
Yeah.
And characters in little boxes. It's not like that.
I really like how it does reference something that goes on, so it's very clearly, this is of this issue, not just, there's Jack posing, looking cool. That can go for any cover. But I don't know, there's... I think it's... There's something about their facial expressions, which... I don't know, it doesn't quite flow for me as well as it should. Like, Jack looks, like, really surprised.
Mm-hmm.
Like, whoa! Like it's like he threw the shirt in, the shirt went up really fast, and, like, he's kind of surprised, like, wow, I didn't realize that shirt was so flammable. And then you've got, like, Ted in the background looking at him and just thinking, like, well, Jack, it is a poly blah 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 fancy science word blend. Obviously, it was going to go up very quickly. I don't see why you're surprised.
Yeah, I get what you mean. Yeah. But you know what? It also makes me realize that this might be the first time we see Ted on the cover.
Ooh, you might be right. Wait, man.
I don't think I've seen him on the cover. Have you? Do you? I'm trying to call up a picture of like the covers on one page, but I don't know where it is.
I
had it some time ago. Oh, but goodness. Yeah.
And now we pretend like we're not stalling as we both scramble on our computers to check the covers. This is good radio. Hearing us vamp. How was your day? Yeah? catch any Pokemon? You gotta catch them all. Yeah, you're right. Yeah. This is his first cover.
Yeah, Ted. Congratulations, old Ted.
Good for you, Ted. Yeah. Many happy returns.
Yeah. Yay. He's looking at... he's looking at Jack in what I assume is approval because of the approval as well, you know, apart from all the, didn't you know this was highly flammable? Not a scientist like your old man, huh? So, yeah, that's what I think. Because, you know, he hates the shirt, and seeing Jack destroying it might be like Jack scoring brownie points with his dad. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Is that all for the cover?
That's all I got for the cover.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's move on to shards.
Sound of glass breaking into shards.
I haven't really gotten the context of the title, but
I was thinking it's like shards, like rather than the one piece of the story, it is just a bunch of a little pieces of it, shards.
I see.
Yeah. Yeah, I think this is an interesting first page because it's, you know, very much relates back to the last page of the previous issue.
Yeah, it's interestingly the past three issues are all connected. That I think also again first three.
Yeah,
I mean this is kind of like pseudo connected because it's only one or two pages, but it's still, you know.
It helps keep it from being just like a little like throwaway episodic thing. You know, the previous issues, even if they don't, well, I mean, yeah, a lot of what happened in the previous issue, with a few exceptions, don't really come back into play so much, I don't think, but this right here is like, that still matters.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. Today I learned a new word about universes like these, fictional universes. It's called metaplot, which is like the over... Do you pronounce it overarching or overarching? Because you say story arc, which is borrowed from the word overarching.
I think I might say like overarching.
I see, even though it's spelled with a CH?
Yeah, but although it is one of those words that every time I say it, I kind of go like, is this the right way to say it? I see this written down a lot more than I hear.
Yeah, exactly. So, metaplot, it's like meta-plot, so it's the overarching or overarching storyline, plot line, and I'm just trying to figure out what exactly is Starman's meta plot, like which part of this is, as long as we see Jack in the story, it's the meta plot, I guess.
Well, we are as I said only a tenth of the way into it.
That's true, that's very true. I have yet to be educated in a more wholesome, holistic way for Starman. So, yeah, up till now, you know, it's still like, where's this story going? There's a lot of parts to it. And with this issue, especially because it's like pieces.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it does make me wonder where I'm supposed to head. Well, I guess I'll know in issue 10. So.
Yeah, this is one of those areas because I am familiar with it. I'm just going to kind of, you can't see it, but I'm nodding my head and be like, I don't want to give anything away. So I'm just going to kind of nod my head.
Okay, cool. All right, so what are we going to talk about today for the first couple of pages?
Well, I'm going to lower the level of conversation real quick. Again, one of those things I never really noticed until I looked at this issue in order to talk about and have to try and say clever things about. But you know, we've got our cast of characters. We've got Octavia. We've got the clown who sometimes is shown to have vampire teeth.
Right.
I can't help but notice the little fluff ball at the end of the clown's hat seems to be very unfortunately placed.
Oh, I noticed that too. So I'm not the only one. Great.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like right in front of Octavia's crotch. Why?
Yeah. And I think when I noticed it at first, I was like, hey, wait a minute. What's going on? Oh, it's his hat. Well, it's better than it not being his hat.
Yeah, that's true. Oh, that's unfortunate. She should have it checked. You know, if it's not his hat. Yeah. I mean, seriously.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, that's really all I got for this opening page.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I like the next 2-3 pages where it's kind of letting us in a way know that, like, okay, Michael is coming with Jack. There was a little bit of like awkward romance that's not going anywhere, but it's just, it feels like it's just kind of gently telling us, like, yeah, the circus isn't going to be that much of a reoccurring element of this comic. So just, you know, don't think too much about it.
Yeah, that's true. One thing that, now thinking about it, makes me, what do you call it? I'm more aware now, I feel, of Jack's characterization.
Mm-hmm.
You know how he called them freaks and stuff?
Yeah.
But the fact that he was willing to have a physical relationship with Octavia, I think it you know, he's not one of those people who would discriminate against difference.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's open. Yeah. He is cool. You know?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I think that's a one good guy point for Jack, despite, like, you know, him being one of those, like, I don't care about this fighting for the good stuff. And I mean, this issue we learned that he is actually very for it, but
yeah,
you know, I'm just a junk collector. But yeah, good on him.
Yeah, it's. I like how you kind of see, in a way, through these actions and just through this issue, that the Jack, even we had in issue one, where he's kind of like, hey, bro, you look dumb in that outfit. Blah. Yeah, that he's toned down. And whether that's... And what I like about it is it feels like it really could go either way. You could kind of go with James Robinson deciding, I'm going to pull back on that aspect of the character. Or you could also make the point of, well, or maybe Jack's just matured because he's had to a great deal in the past, you know, what's this been, like, month?
Feels a lot longer, but yeah, I think so. Yeah. Okay. So.
Nice sudden transition from the circus tents to the spires of Opal City with a pirate flag.
Oh, wow. Now that you point that out, I mean, yeah, you know how, like, the structure of the tents and the buildings kind of look like each other?
Mm-mm. Yeah.
And okay, pirate. Why is there a pirate flag?
The way the story goes is Tony Harris really likes pirates.
Oh, right! Yeah, you mentioned that.
Yeah.
Okay, right. Okay. So, we see... it's like Turk County. That's right. Turk County is where the circus was. And then now we're back in Opal.
Yeah. Now, we should probably mention before we go on... I'm sorry if you're about to mention this... Mm-hmm. They do kind of make the notice on this page is that maybe it was a few pages ago that, you know, the first time the air of Turk County didn't seem peppered and spiteful.
Right, now that
Bliss is gone, maybe Turk County doesn't have that "my mother's buried in the basement" feel to it.
Like the curse has been lifted. The curse of Bliss. It's ironic. It's very ironic that his name is Bliss. yeah.
Good showing. Good showing, Robinson.
Yeah. All right. So, yeah. What's it called? Turk County. It just does not come that word. Turk County is now a little happier, but still very weird, I think. They are still calling the encampment Freak Town. This cluster of tents and caravans and small ancient wagons.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that's what's in the book.
Yeah.
Okay.
Next page.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And we get a nice after several very still panels
that
almost feel like snapshots, we finally get something dynamic.
Uh-huh.
As it's Jack sweeping in, kicking a guy in the face while pulling another guy's hair out, and Uzis are firing, and, you know, we got a guy who's wearing a mask that looks a lot like Jack's shirt.
Yeah, I noticed that too. And the mask also appeared in previous issues where just hooligans wearing masks like these trying to rob the museum or something. So I finally know why they sport masks like these.
Yeah.
But we'll save that for the later pages. And yeah, I like how in this page there's the, you know, traditional sound effects. Thud.
Buddha.
Yeah, I think that's supposed to be the bullets, right?
Is it? Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I like the sound effects on it. It adds a nice little touch to me.
Mm-hmm. They're very unconventionally spelt, I think. I like that. Yeah. Because where I come from, the onomatopoeia is completely different.
Really?
From the rest of... Yeah. I mean... Then again, I live in Japan, and that's also very different from Western, you know, onomatopoeia, like bang and thwack, because that's very English. But like, instead of saying beep for like trains closing, I think to my very Singaporean ears, to many Singaporean ears, it's like toot, toot, toot. Not beep, beep, beep.
So what's the Singaporean onomatopoeia for, like the thud type sound here, of, like, the things kind of colliding?
For colliding, I'm not... The one that comes straight to my mind is pia.
Pia?
Pia. With a K at the end, P-I-A-K.
Nice.
That's like a slap. Yeah, that's very Singaporean. Singaporeans, if you're listening to this, hey, represent!
And if you use the Singaporean Uzi?
Uzi. Dew, dew, dew!
That sounds like a laser gun!
Probably, yeah.
It's the city of the future!
It is. It totally is. I mean, if you look at Singapore, it does look like the city of the future, so... a parallel opal? Asian opal?
I'm not going down that road. I'm not going down that road.
Okay.
In fact, I'm gonna change the page where we get another great word of swack!
Yeah, swack. That's him, like, was he sweeping? I don't want to call it sweeping. Yeah. he's brandishing his rod. That sounds so much like something else. But yeah. So, yes.
Now, I really like, again, just kind of, I bring it up almost every issue, how Jack will think one thing and then almost undercut it.
Mm-hmm.
And we kind of get where he's doing the, like, boy, do I live to fight the good fight?
Yeah.
And then immediately he's like, ah, if I'd only bought that carpet, it was 30s, bold deco patterns.
Yeah.
Yeah, and right, even though he's in the fighting, he's just still thinking about deals. Which kind of makes you wondering, is the fight he's talking about, is it the fight against the criminals? Or is it that kind of, like, wheeling and dealing fight? Who can get the best deal?
Yeah. It's a kind of like double entendre in a way that I think it's very clever to be used here. And come to think of it, it's also one of those things like he's channeling all his frustration over the deals and the lost bargains into this fight. And he's like, these damn people stealing my money. You know.
Urgh.
Yeah. And so there really is a lot of talk about, like, very detailed talk about the deals. Yeah, but I see what you mean. He does undercut himself, and he is very... He's fighting very well.
Mm.
But he does not... He does not give himself enough credit, I think, not in these scenes.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe, or maybe he's just like, I'm so good already, I don't have to think about, you know, fighting per se, I just need to... He's one of those people
who...
Yes, sorry.
No, go ahead.
You know, one of those kids who have to have music playing or TV in the background while they do their homework, you know?
Mm-hmm. Has to fill the silence, even if it's just with his thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what I like, especially in the next page, where we get the it's another 3-panel one, but the one where it's got that middle very green panel.
Mm-hmm.
In those three pages, Jack looks a lot more. Like, yeah, I mean, he's still fighting and you can kind of see that he's struggling, but he does look more like he's enjoying himself than maybe we've seen him in other fights.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that the thrill of the conflict is is starting to win him over.
Yeah. Yeah, and the words too, but no, I find trouble instead.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But that's it's not like him actually finding it. He is looking for a shopfront, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then by the fact that he sees it and he meets it head on, you know, he finds this, I am Starman. If there's trouble, I will deal with it. Like, I'm the one to deal with it.
Yeah.
So yep.
Yeah. Which, you know, I do appreciate them moving him away from the kind of constant denials.
Mm.
It's nice to see him embrace it, not only because it shows growth as a character, but, you know, otherwise it just starts after 10 issues. If the title character doesn't start embracing who he is, it might feel a little bit awkward.
Yeah. Agreed.
Yeah.
Okay.
Also, just kind of want to point out the it's something about having the red and the yellow and the black. The colors look so vibrant here.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't think there are any, you know, it's still Gregory Wright. And I don't know if anything's really changed, but they really just pop in these pages.
Mm-mm-mm. Yeah. Good job. Face the person who knows nothing about coloring. But yeah, I agree with you. I think maybe because there are a lot of reds in this. The guy wearing the mask is also dressed in red.
Yeah. And then it's just, like if we go from this this last page of the fight scene to the page with Ted, like even here we can tell this one it's happening, you know, in the day. I feel like saying afternoon is kind of reading into it maybe a little too much just on the colors. But we change the page, and with the strength of the colors and the bit more muted and how Jack looks a bit more washed out, we're like, oh yeah, by the way, it's night now.
You know, talking about colors, I really wonder how they are chosen. Like, you know, let's make Jack's shirt red. Let's make Ted's shirt pink. What shade of pink? Why? How? Who decides it? I mean, what determines it? You know.
Like I know there's a whole bunch of like color theory out there,
but
yeah. But I also know all of that is pretty beyond me. But I've heard interviews with colorists. Just going lightly into like, you know, well, here's palette and here's theory and here's how it works together and And if you do it too much this way, things start looking blah, blah, blah. It's just like, oh my goodness, this isn't just like, I'm going to color this so it'll look pretty. There is a lot of tonal aspects that go into it. And when it works right, like in here, like unless, I think it's so easy for me to kind of forget. Right. You know, the whole reason I kind of know this scene is at night is because Greg Wright did an excellent job of just tiny changes in palette to remind me, this is nighttime.
Yeah. That's very cool. I didn't know that there was, like, color theory. Sorry, very Japanese reaction there.
Be careful, people are going to think you're from Asia or something.
Oh, right, sorry. No, sorry, I'm very Asian, guys, very Asian. So Asian.
And I like how in that page with Ted, you know, we do have Jack kind of putting words to that whole, like, how he is starting to... you know, I like feeling that these guys are off the street. And then Ted saying, well, you know, that feeling, it's addictive.
I think that's one of the tropes for many superhero story. It's never overused. It's one of those things I think a lot of us can relate to.
Yeah.
You know, because doing good is... It does make you feel good as well. So, I mean, to us as readers and who are glimpsing into this universe, we are like, yeah, I mean, totally makes sense. Good is, like, this is like, you know, when we give directions to a stranger, but amplified and times 1,000 million, you know, it's that they are saving lives and doing stuff. Yeah.
And very rarely when you give directions or return someone's wallet, do you get like the adrenaline rush at the same time?
Yeah. So, it's a good trope. Okay.
Yeah. So,
what's next?
We've got the kind of talking about Ragdoll and Jack's shirt.
Yeah.
And so, question for you. I'm on the page where it starts off with that kind of horizontal blue panel. You know, you're wearing that t-shirt, the one you know I don't like. And it's the I know, I forgot, sorry Dad. And then we've got a panel of kind of Ted just resting his head in his hand. What do you think Ted's thinking there?
The one where he's like, I don't like it. Oh, yeah, I'm sorry, Dad. And he's like, resting his head.
Yeah, and you get that one panel where it's just a beat of Ted kind of just, you know, putting his head in his hand with the two fingers out.
It's probably like, oh, these kids. Kids nowadays.
Yeah.
Right?
Like, yeah, because I was wondering, like, well, is it him... trying to like keep from getting frustrated or saying something short with Jack? Is it him just kind of being like, "Oh, Jack," or?
At least it was, he follows up with, well, at least it was nothing malicious.
Yeah.
I think maybe, you know, back before Jack was Starman, Tent might have reacted differently.
I think, I mean, so.
I'm just basing this on the following conversation, you know, where Jack says, "I wasn't trying to get my old man riled. No, I have a lot on my mind, blah, blah, blah." And to say something like that, to predict Ted's possible anger, maybe, you know, in the past, he reacted strongly to this shirt.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Or, you know, it's that, as well as, since we have Jack saying he wasn't trying to get his old man riled, maybe in the past this would be something Jack would do to kind of be like, "Hey, no, you know, if you don't like the shirt, get over it, jerk." And kind of, yeah, maybe that panel is Ted going, like, kind of looking and thinking, like, you know, no, this is not what's happening here. And Jack just kind of confirms it in the next panel of, "Hey, you know, no, seriously, this was an accident."
Right, yeah. The evolution of the relationship, I guess, you know, hints of it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And right. Then it flows into that the bit of Jack asking for more of the hidden history of Starman.
Right. Which I'm surprised, actually, before this conversation, was not written in the Shades Journal. So maybe the Shades Journals are like really old.
Yeah. Yeah, and maybe there's just a lot of them, and working his way through, and
and Jack's not there yet.
Yeah, because the story he just read was dealing with Oscar Wilde.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
What about Michael? That's what he obviously read about Michael. So
right.
Which part of the timeline that does Michael turn up? That's what I want to know too.
Yeah. Well, we'll get there, but I think it says the 70s.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So, Jack asks Ted about the shirt, and before this, I didn't notice it at all. Like before this issue. So, I'm glad they're talking about it. It's one of those new... Let's open a new plot point right here.
Yeah.
Ding!
Haha.
Yeah. But one interesting comparison. Manson, Axl Rose or something? Is that okay? Manson, right? That like a rock band. I think Axl Rose? Is that a rock band? In the video.
Axl Rose was the front man for Guns N' Roses.
Okay, right.
Yeah.
It is not a rock band. He is part of a rock band, right?
Yes.
Okay. So I did Google the Manson thingy. Charles Manson, right?
It's yes.
Like this murderer or something?
Yes.
So, yeah. So, after reading a little bit about it, I thought it was very much like, like people who, neo-Nazis, is that the name? Who kind of like, I was going to say worship Hitler, but they follow the movement, the Nazi movement. Yeah, So, you know how people use the swastika to, what do you call it? Represent their identity. Yeah. So, I guess it's, I tried to equate the, because I couldn't really relate to Manson as a symbol. So, you know, okay. to compare my understanding of history and to draw a parallel with history and this universe, that was what I thought of.
No, that seems know. To that seems to make, scale wise. I mean, there's trouble with translations, but just theory wise and representation wise, I think that's a really good fit.
Okay. So that's the kind of that's the what do you call it? That's the weight of ragdoll.
Ragdoll.
That's the severity of this symbol that Ted sees. That's what he. That's how severe it seems to him. It's not just a rag doll. It means a lot more.
Yeah, it's definitely brings up some. Not only of the times, like painful memories of the times, and just the kind of, almost. Because ragdoll was basically, this was before the word was used as much as it is today, but ragdoll comes off basically as a terrorist. And then you also have what we find out here, the role that Ted played in ending that evening.
Yeah. He went on about his friends, and eventually he said, he killed Ragdoll.
Yeah.
Right?
I know that the way it's done here, where he talks about his friends, it doesn't make it easy for new readers or for people unfamiliar with the kind of the JSA, the Justice Society, to know who they're talking about. But at the same time, that he calls them by name, Jay, Alan, Rex, Chuck, me, it makes them, they're his friends. They weren't like, and then the five of us, Flash, Green Lantern, Rex, who was Rex? I think that would be Our Man. Chuck is Dr. Midnight. And if he had called them by their code names, it wouldn't feel as familiar.
Right. Yeah, I get what you mean. It's one of those things that a lot of people, I feel, misunderstand about Western conventions when it comes to using names. I think this is a really good example of how calling someone by their first name really, it signifies kinship and the relations between individuals, because this is just one of those tidbits about being a foreigner living in Japan, where a lot of Japanese people actually think, or they assume, that it makes foreigners happier if they refer to us by our first names.
Yeah.
Even though we might be in a position that, for example, I was a teacher, and it was really weird to have my students call me just by my first name.
Yeah.
Because I was a teacher back in Singapore, so nobody would ever dream of calling their teacher by their first name. It would always be like Miss or Mrs. with a surname. So it wouldn't even there wouldn't even be a mention of your first name.
Yeah, yeah.
Unless there was another teacher with the same surname, and then, you know, they would refer to the teacher with the entire name. So I think this is one of those, yeah, like if they are like two, I'm Quick, I'm Lydia Quick. So if there were two Quicks, I would be like Miss Lydia Quick, and the other person would be Miss ABC Quick. Yeah. So when you go to the staff room, you'll be like, I would like to see Miss Quick, please. Which one? So you don't. Yeah. So the students would preempt the teachers and would just, I want to see Miss Lydia Quick. Oh, okay. Stuff like that. Yeah. So. Yeah, I think this is a really interesting example of, you know, they are my friends, and that's why I use their names.
Yeah.
So, yeah, about that's, I think that's a really, at the risk of sounding like a sap, it's a very beautiful example of one of those things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I completely agree, and I also think it makes it feel like more realistic. And because I don't want to put down other things, but I've been watching certain shows based on superheroes, say a girl who wears blue and flies around with a red cape.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the dialogue there, it's exposition clumsily forced in, so no one ever gets lost. You know, there's a lot of like, oh look, the door, it's opening, someone's coming out, like it's
really,
there's a lot of like, we want to make sure that whoever's watching this knows what's going on. And I like, you know, it's people talking in a way they never quite talk, and I like this not only for all the closeness and the friendship it adds there, but it's also like, well, that's how you talk. Like, if you're going to talk about your friends, you're going to talk about them not like they're your friends. You're not going to You know.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
To kind of move us along, because wow, we're already 50 minutes into this. Yowza.
Okay.
which I guess actually, folks, you know, I know a general rule of thumb for podcasts is to try and keep things around an hour if possible. Our last couple of episodes, we've been enjoying talking about, so we're going like an hour 5, hour 10, hour 16. So, you know, if you don't mind, let us know. Do we need to try and sharpen this up a little bit, try and keep it more towards 45 minutes to an hour, or are y'all enjoying it when we go a little bit in depth on things like cultures and familiarity issues? You know, let us know. Let us know.
Yeah. Let us know. Okay. I'm on the page where I want to say Ted is erasing the blackboard.
Yeah.
Okay. So we're there, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Can you help me remember something?
Okay.
Is this the first time in the series that we're told that Ted Knight helped make the atomic bomb and that he was in sanitariums?
I think so. Yeah, I didn't get the sanitarium part though. What experiments?
Sanitariums are kind of the old-fashioned name for basically, you know, therapeutic hospitals, houses.
Yeah, we used to call them asylums. I don't know.
Yeah, asylums. Yeah.
So that might not be the most PC word as well. I don't know, but
I'm sure it's more PC than nut house.
Yeah. Okay. But why was he there, though? I didn't see, because I assume he's talking about it as if it's a bad thing, and I didn't get that connection.
I'm pretty sure this is, like, this idea of him kind of making the A-bomb and spending times institutionalized is older than this comic. But I think it was the idea that, you know, the kind of the guilt of what he did. He made a bomb, and the bomb did this, kind of made him snap for a little bit.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I see. Okay, I get it now. But yes, I think this is the first time it's mentioned that he helped make the A-bomb, so. One thing is that face, you know, where I've lived in shame for a lot of things, Jack, that bubble, where it's in, that face accompanying the bubble. Is it, Ted?
Yes.
Okay. So I assume the next small panel at the bottom with Starman, it's also Ted?
Which?
The one with the green cape. I don't know, I keep seeing Starman. Is this Starman? Is this Ted's old self?
I took it that way. That is his original outfit, maybe? Just kind of on display.
Oh, okay. Ted had a piercing? Really? Is that Ted or is that Jack? This...
No, okay, I think in the blue panel, that's Jack's face, and the word balloons are going off panel to Ted.
Okay. Got it. Okay. It makes a lot of sense now. Thank you for explaining that. Yes.
Oh, no problem. Yay.
You guys, it's a pretty confusing page. Sorry.
Yeah. I really like how it's not the final bit of their conversation, but we had, you know, what was, I mean, a very troubling, not troubling, but a very difficult conversation for Ted to give to his son.
Yeah,
and I like how at the end of it, it's just kind of like right before the tag on the next page, it's Jack being like, you know, basically saying like, "Hey, let's have dinner together." Like, let's be a family. Let's make sure we take that step to continue being a family. I really like that.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, even though Dad says, "I like to be alone," he reaches out. That's important.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think now they have something more to share about because they're both Starmen. They both have seen the realities of being Starmen, of you know, sometimes really having to snuff someone out. And not saying that in the real world it's you have to kill to resolve something, but I'm talking about, like, it, within the universe, I understand it. It's, you know, they have to do it. They have to do what they have to do. Okay. And
that ultimately their decisions in these stories don't come from a sense of, you know, hate or righteous anger. In the stories we're given in Jad, and Jack's kind of, you know, if I learned someone threatened you with death, if I thought they were serious, let both of their conditionals hinge upon protecting someone close to them.
Yep.
Not in a way, not really even themselves, but someone else.
Yeah.
And, you know, again, we've mentioned this before. I really like how in that, that panel of Ted looking up at Jack as he's flying away. I like that you can look at Ted and be like, okay, this does look a lot like Jack.
Yeah.
In a way, almost the hairline even.
Yeah. And that, like, runaway strand of hair.
Yeah.
Right? Yep.
Good job, Tony Harris.
Flip the page.
Lord of the Flies! Wow! Yeah. It's a fly! Wow!
Yeah, it's a giant fly.
Really creepy. Really well done.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And I love the scene where the fly brings the, I think it's a policeman?
Yeah.
And the guard. Oh, but it says like OPD, so Opal Police Department,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, I think so too.
Into the poster.
Mm.
This is kind of like combined with that Rasputin guy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
On the other page.
Yep, because we have 11:30, then 11:45.
Mm. And we see a repeat of a shot where the poster is on and the poster is off, so you know for sure that's the same poster.
Yeah.
And I can't help but recall that bit about the Hawaiian shirt or something.
Mm.
Like, you know, people disappearing through shirts and pictures.
Yep.
So I wonder if it's all related. And, you know, the time thing, that issue, that story with the Hawaiian shirts, the time was also very pronounced.
Mm-mm.
So this just makes me think of it.
Yeah. It's great callbacks. Very, very nice pacing. I like that each of these three little moments all tied around the same geographic space is just that one page.
Mm-mm.
You know?
Yeah.
It's like, bang, here comes the handler, bang, here comes the shade. Just three quick in a row.
Yeah. Oh, the shade. I'm a fangirl. Yes. But the shade, he appears like, what, 2-3 hours after the...
Yeah, about 3 hours,
abduction.
Hours, 2.5.
Yeah. Well, I can't wait for the next issue. I can't wait to read the next issue. Because, you know, I like the shade. So.
Mm.
Okay.
They're so roping us in, like, wanting to know where that storyline is going.
I know, right? Yeah. And he pokes at something, I think.
Yeah.
The shade. He's poking at something, but I can't really... It's the window or something, but I can't really figure out.
Well, I took that to be, like, even though it looks a little different in a way, like, where the poster was hung. Like,
yep,
it was right here.
Right.
This is where it was. That's how I took it.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Oh, okay.
I know we got to move on, but I kind of want to mention it. I really like, again, it just goes with the pacing. The first time we see the poster used with the woman who broke up with her girlfriend or whose girlfriend broke up with her, we got like this whole bit about her, and we really got to know her.
Mm.
But I like how now we've seen that this is our third time seeing the poster take someone, and now it's just like, you know what's going on. Boom.
Yep.
There you go.
Yeah.
You don't need any more.
Yeah. True that. The second time was with the guy with all the weird shit in his bag.
Yeah. The finger.
Yeah, and the condoms. And the stapler. Who carries around a stapler?
I like that it's not the finger that's giving you the pause. The stapler.
Because, I don't know, I mean, if it's a finger, it's different? I carry different stuff in my bag, but I wouldn't ever carry not a big stapler. I'll carry a small stapler. Okay,
so Jack's at a swap meet now.
Yes. Oh, I love this scene. These scenes.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous because the prices that he quotes are always like so low.
25, 45, 1... Oh, it's got such a great rhythm to it.
Yes, it does. Yeah. I like these kind of things too, where, you know, rhythm of the text is so important.
Yeah.
If you just change the price, the way the words, the pacing of the words would change too. So, you know, 112, 100.5. That's great.
Mm.
The thing is like. The funniest thing for me was when he was buying coffee. Like, who bargains for coffee? It's not even like the first three panels are him buying stuff. Like,
yep.
you know, for a shop, but the fourth panel is like, no, Jack, seriously, just pay for the coffee.
And it's the old guy behind the cash register, the finger point, like, it's $1.07.
Yeah.
Don't try that.
Yeah. So cute.
And then we get Matt O'Dare doing some bad things.
Yeah.
Beating people, cutting off thumbs, stealing evidence.
Yeah, man. It's like, we finally get to see, I'm looking at both pages at once. Mm-hmm. We finally get to see that he's actually working for the dark side as well, and they are. That's where he's getting his money. So I see. Okay, so that's it makes the first page where, you know, cutting thumbs and stuff. It makes it. It links up the story for me.
Yeah.
So I think the question is, what's going on in the black and white panels? You know.
Yeah.
I went to see some spoilers last week. So
oh no!
I think I kind of get it, but if I am not mistaken, they are drawn in a way that it's Odette looking at the character. I think, I'm not sure, because according to the spoilers.
Oh, don't go into the spoilers.
Yeah, I'm not going to say what the spoilers are, but according to the spoilers, there's an identity associated with Odette, and this guy, who is featured in prominence in this page, in right smack in the middle of this page, does not seem to fit the bill, so I'm not sure. Yeah.
Yeah. It's hard to say on an initial read what those black and white bits are, but I think the way, you know, what is it that whispers in his ear?
Right.
It's showing that there's some kind of connection between these black and white bits and Matt having, you know, issues with what he's doing.
Yeah. That's true. Yeah,
and the Indian looking guy has something to do with that.
Yeah. So I was going to say that the black and white guy, the black and white panel on the thumb cutting page.
Yeah.
And the guy in the rain. It's the same guy.
Yes.
Definitely the same guy. So.
Definitely the same guy.
Yes, okay. Dun, dun, dun.
And then we get Nash.
I did not recognize her. She is, I think she got her hair cut.
Yeah, she looks a little bit like a little bit of a haircut. And also she looks much more empowered, powerful.
She reminds me of Angelina Jolie.
Huh. I can see that. It's not where I went, but I can see that.
In these panels, she reminds me of Angelina Jolie in those Tomb Raider films. Okay, so she is in prison.
Yes.
And we are told that she has been able to manipulate some of the people around her. And possibly she uses them to escape.
It seems to be a little bit, yeah.
Because
they don't say any of the names of the guards who discover it, but she's definitely got three guards who she's seduced into being on her side, and two fellow inmates. And you know, there's a nice little parallel here of how earlier in the issue we had Ragdoll, the story of Ragdoll basically forming his own little cult, and here even though it's only five people, we see Nash kind of doing the same thing. She's right. Using that force of personality.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Mm. And she has that one line where she says, "I'm bored."
And it's creepy.
Yeah.
And she looks happy.
Yeah, there's a ghost of a smile on her face. And I really wonder whether it's in the same day as the poster thing, because we have a panel of when the guards find out that she is she has escaped. Oh. There's a shot of his watch.
Yeah.
And it's like 7 o'clock. So, you know, time. Hmm.
I wonder.
Yeah, I mean, if they drew this in, they would obviously be thinking, what time should we make it now?
Yeah. You know? And you know, I think it is supposed to be. I think this is all kind of supposed to be on the same day, or maybe the poster thing happened the day before, and this is the next evening. Mm-hmm. Because we've got Jack's bargain hunting falls after the poster incident.
Mm. Right, I see. Yeah.
And at the end of the issue, we have Jack in his apartment, but he's basically, you know, it looks like he's wearing the same clothes, that same kind of lime green shirt that he was earlier in the day.
Mm-mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, I don't know, time seems to be very specific right to the end of the issue, because it talks about, this is skipping to the last page, yes. In 43 seconds the phone will ring. So 43 seconds, that is very specific. Yeah. So, what? Backtracking to when the guards found Nash...
Mm. Or didn't find Nash.
Oh, right. Yeah. The alarm didn't sound, so she escaped silently.
Mm.
And when they go into a cell, we see a picture of Jack on the bedside table. That's creepy.
Yup.
And it's creepy because on the walls of her cell, she writes, "Jack is to blame. Die, Starman, die." And it's just weird. You know that she hates him, but she has his picture.
And the wait and see what I become again.
Yeah, the note on her bed.
Yep.
I don't know, man. Do you even keep your enemy's photo on your bedside table? I mean, do people even do that? Do they? Maybe they do, you know.
Maybe. If they're that crazy and obsessed, would not surprise me.
For motivation's sake. Yeah. Yeah, so that's what she does. I think that's a nice thing, actually, for the comic to put in all this detail to see the mania of these people, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you also gotta like how at this point we can see this and be like, ooh, she's kind of crazy, but no one's telling us. No one's saying like, oh no, not Nash, she is crazy, she's obsessed with Jack. Like, it's just, it's there. You know, and that makes it so much more effective.
Yeah. Yeah, I get what you mean. Showing, not telling.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Good all job. Right,
so we go on to the next
page. The last page. Woo!
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man. Yep, and it's just, I mean, all I really got to say about this is Jack just looks so serene. He's got his shoes off. He's lying on what doesn't look like the most comfortable of chairs, but he looks happy.
Mm.
You know, he's got clutter, got his stuff. He looks content. But in 43 seconds,
the phone will ring with news of Nash's escape. Yeah, and in an hour, the shade will come.
Yay.
But I had to Google for some stuff here. I had to Google who Sam Shepard was and who Gary Cooper was. And Bog9. I had to Google that as well. Yeah. A lot of references from long ago that I don't get. Yeah. Right.
Well, it's nice that you're getting to learn about really old culture that probably most people your age in the States even probably really? Don't know about.
Oh, I win!
Yeah, like I bet there'd be a lot of people who would not know Sam Shepard movies.
Okay, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool.
So overall, what do you think of this issue?
I wouldn't say I am a big fan of it, actually. It's very informative, but that's about it, you know? There were some parts that I found really cute, and it definitely moved the story forward, but it wasn't one of those, like, oh man, this issue is so good! It wasn't one of those.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I'm right there with you. I still think I liked it better than the Times Past story we had earlier. But
the one with Oscar Wilde?
Yeah, yeah.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think for me this issue was it was prologue.
Nice way to put it.
Yeah, it was very piecemeal. It had some really good moments, but as a whole, it was really well done lead in. But that means when you read it just as a standalone, it doesn't have enough weight.
Yeah. It's like, you know, before the concert, you go and look at the set, and there's nobody there.
Yeah,
and you're just looking at an empty stage and. Like, you see all the mechanics of it. Maybe you're just looking at, you know, the props and testing out the way the stage rotates and stuff. But there's nothing on it. There's no drama. There's no, you know, there's nothing there.
Yeah,
so it's one of those things. Yeah. Yeah, so this issue was pretty much that. Not that it's a bad issue.
No, it's just when we've had so many kind of good issues in, you know, out of the 10 issues we've read, I'd say 8 of them have been really, really, really strong.
Yeah.
And so when something comes out like this, that, I mean, it's still good, but it doesn't hit the high mark.
Yes. You don't feel like you're in the thick of things. But you know that it's important because all these things, they're like, hey, they're waving, it's a carrot and they're waving it at you.
You just
gotta go bite on it and wait for the next issue.
To steal your theater example, it would be like if you're watching, say, something like Rent, and you watch the first song or two that introduces you to your cast of characters, and they say, all right, tune in next week. We'll continue. Right. Well, wait, that was good, but don't you have... Okay. So, where can they find you on the web?
You can find me on YouTube and Twitter and Instagram at Quack Channel, or on Facebook, Quack Channel. That's my username on all of these platforms, Quek Channel. And how about you, Brent?
Well, you can find me on Twitter. You can follow me there at Dead Troubadour. You can go to my main website, deadlytroubadour.com. Mm-hmm. And you can, if you go to Facebook, you can directly like, well, not this show, but you can go to Comics League International and like that. If you want to find my writer page, that's Brent Thomas. And, you know, if you really want to give something back, if you're like, these kids, they're working hard there, you can go to Patreon and search for Brent Thomas, and you can, you know, maybe throw a dollar my way, dollar or two my way, helps pay for the show, helps give a little motivation, and if we get enough, I can take Lydia out for ice cream, because who doesn't like ice cream in the summer?
Yay! I love ice cream.
Excellent. If you're enjoying the show, why don't you go to iTunes and subscribe and leave a rating and review. And really, what would also be helpful is just, you know, honestly, tell a friend who likes comics. Why don't you check out this show?
Yes, please.
Well, that's all I got. How about you?
That's all I got too. I'm just really looking forward to seeing The Shade.
maybe he'll be more in the next issue. Maybe he'll show up for more than just one page. You got your jonesing on.
Yeah. Okay. Well, my jonesing on.
Until next time.
Bye.
There's a storm now waiting in the sky. He'd like to come and meet us, but he thinks he'd blow our minds. There's a storm now waiting in the sky. He's told us not to blow it, 'cause he knows it's all worthwhile. He told me, let the children lose it, let the children use it, let all the children boogie.